This gospel we just heard is in the exact center of Mark's gospel. And he puts it there because he wants us to pay attention to this passage. He wants us to understand that there's something about what Jesus says here that is central to what it means to be Christian, and indeed to what it means to be human. And Jesus says, the Son of Man, and Son of Man is a term borrowed from the prophet Daniel, and it simply means the human one. And in Jesus, he's the human one par excellence. He is the human being. He's the model, the template for what humanity is designed by God to be. This is our identity. This is our destiny. This is who we are. And it's surprising to Peter, because Peter is expecting the Christ, the anointed one, in other words, the Messiah. Like most of the people in Israel at that time, they expected a powerful king, a brilliant general who would free them from Roman occupation and give them autonomy once again, a free and self-determining Israel. And Jesus says, you're thinking like human beings do. You should be thinking like God because you have divine life in you. Jesus is the author of life. He is the eternal Son. He is the Word spoken by the Father at the beginning of creation. Everything in existence owes its being to him. And now he comes in Jesus in human flesh to show what that should look like. And it doesn't look like someone powerful in this world's terms. It doesn't look like someone even successful in this world's terms. Don't be thinking like humans, think like God. And how does God think? Well, the Son of Man, the human one, the human being par excellence, he has to go to Jerusalem and suffer at the hands of the chief priests and the elders and the scribes and be put to death and then rise again on the third day. It's not the answer we would want. It's not what we would expect. And it's rather disturbing when you think about it. If this is the center of Mark's gospel, then what does it say about Jesus? Everything up leading up to this point has been success. He's healed people. He's raised people from the dead. He's preached to throngs, thousands of people. He has fed people out on the mountainside by multiplying the loaves and the fish. I mean, he's just done fantastic things. And he speaks with authority, and people are in awe of him. Building up. And then the second half of the gospel is the falling down. Because for the rest of Jesus' life, he's going to be heading to Jerusalem, heading to the cross, heading to his death, heading to his loss and failure and humiliation. Because this is the human one. This is what the human one looks like. Our lives are similar to that. We spend the first half of our lives building up, getting independent, getting educated, getting our own job, establishing our own family, establishing our place in the world. And then there's a certain point in life where we begin to discover that all that is fairly meaningless. That doesn't make me who I am, that it doesn't really deeply satisfy me for eternal life. It's just for now. You know, if God is ever disappointed in human beings, it's because we think too small. And Jesus, the human one who comes from God and is God, who is living the divine life in a human body, he's aware of the immensity of it. He's aware of the universe, the cosmos. He's aware of eternity. He's experienced eternity from within. And here's Peter hoping that Israel could become independent again. Who cares? That was just for then. That was 2,000 years ago already. So what if they had become independent from Rome? Who cares in the bigger picture of things? Jesus is the human one who keeps in mind the enormity of it all, the big picture. And in the big picture, this small little speck of a life that we humans go through is just nothing. It just isn't worth hanging on to. It isn't something that is of eternal value. So let it go. Jesus understands that even as God, his little earthly life, his 30-some years here on this earth in Palestine in the first century, is fairly meaningless, because he has an eternal life that he comes from and that he's going toward, and that's what really matters. And he wants to show us that we're in the same situation, that our little lives here are fairly worthless, but the life that God is promising us, that God is giving us, is worth eternity. It has no limit to its value. And so we learn how to let go. And we practice that here in the liturgy. Every Sunday we gather here around a sacrificial altar and remember the sacrificial offering of Jesus' life on the cross. And we always have some kind of a crucifix or an image of the crucifixion that we're looking at to remind us that that's our identity. Not the successes of this world, not the honors of this world, but that. And so we're invited to lay our lives down on the altar along with Christ, to at least ritually give ourselves back to God who gave himself to us on the cross, to lay down our lives, to let go, to lose, to be humiliated, to be of service to others. And that second reading from the letter of James kind of puts that into a very specific context. What good is faith if it doesn't end up in some kind of practice? Jesus offered his life for us because he cared more about us than his own life. And we need to learn how to care more for the poor or whoever is in need, whoever presents themselves for our help. We need to care more about that person than about ourselves. That's what living sacrificially means. And it's hard to do, and we have to make decisions almost every day about what that means, what that's going to look like today in my life, because it's different for everybody in every generation. But in prayer and reflection, I'm constantly evaluating, how can I be Christ today? How can I be Christ to this person, to that group? One of the things we're going to pray in a few minutes, we always pray this in the Eucharistic prayer on Sunday, for the salvation of the world, the peace and the salvation of all the world. Because here in the liturgy, we are not as concerned about our own salvation as we are about theirs. That's Christ-like. To care more about the salvation of others than our own. And how can we do that? Because we know that our salvation is assured. How can Jesus die on the cross? Because he knows about the resurrection. He knows that that's not real, lasting death. And how can we offer ourselves in service and risk and put ourselves in a vulnerable and humiliating place? Because we know that there's more than this. Because we know the end of the story. We know that while Christ never promised us that we wouldn't die, he promised that we would rise from death. That this small death really has no power over us because we are beneficiaries of the promise of eternal life and glory.